B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to a special edition of the MRL Show Rap Party Podcast. It is the 20th anniversary of 9/11 on Saturday, tomorrow. Today is 9/10. And it's funny, I have a New York Post paper from the morning of 9/10 when I stopped off at the airport before I got down to my gate and before I knew that there was a terrorist attack that morning.
9/11?
On the morning of 9/11, yeah. You're right. So I had the newspaper from 9/11.
Yes.
Yes. Which was just like your basic ordinary morning. And then the next day it was the picture of the World Trade Center blowing up and the headline of the Post said it's war.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just amazing how the 2 days were completely different, the two papers.
Yeah, I mean, the day that everything stopped.
Do you know the times, Roy?
Yeah, it was 8:40-something.
8:46.
9:30.
No, wasn't it 9:05 or something?
8:46. 5 hijackers took control of American Airlines Flight 11 and flew it into the heart of New York City in the northern part of the World Trade Center's North Tower, Tower 1. 9:03, 5 other hijackers flew United Airlines Flight 172 into the South Tower. 9:37, another 5 hijackers flew American Airlines Flight 77 into the west side of the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia. 10:03, 4 hijackers crashed United Airlines Flight 93 into a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
You know what I have a hard time with? Is that like... was it a jingle of the keys, like, look what's happening over here so that they could do these other two things too? Or, like, we were so ill-prepared that, like, I get the first thing, like, the first 8:45 and then the 9:03. But, like, at 9:03, were we not at that point what are we going to do with these other two planes that have been hijacked?
They already knew the planes weren't responding and potential hijacks.
So how did it take 30 more minutes before you did? Like, well, they didn't do anything.
By the time the fighter jet reached the plane that crashed to the Pentagon, he saw a visual of the actual impact. So he was just late. He missed it.
Right, but it's not like these... I mean, I don't know where they pulled the fighter jets from, but like you would think there would be fighter jets close to D.C.
Well, I think on that specific day, too, there was also the fighter jets. A lot of the military personnel was doing a training exercise.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they thought it was they kept asking, is it real life? Is it real life?
Yeah. There was also, you know, everything was tied up, you know, and then there was all this breakdown in communication between the towers and everyone else. Just take the Secret Service, for example. Secret Service was worried about, of course, Bush because he was on location in Florida and was very well publicized where he was.
Yeah.
Yet Bush was adamant about not leaving. He wanted to address the nation from the school.
Did he?
He did address the nation from the school, yep. And so his people were told that another plane was hijacked and is heading towards Washington in about 40 minutes. However, his people that's down in Florida didn't relay that information to the Joint Operations Center in Washington.
I read a book into all this.
It's called Zero Fail.
Okay.
And so the Joint Operations Center in Washington didn't find out that the plane was heading what they thought originally was for the White House, didn't find out until the plane was 10 minutes away. Which is why there's video of people running out of government buildings in Washington because they only had a 10-minute head start.
Yeah.
All because the protocol was to tell the Secret Service detail.
Right.
Which it should have been, well, no, tell the center first. They'll then figure out who needs to know what.
Because 45 minutes seems like a long time for me for the government to react, right?
Well, yeah, and supposedly, Roy, I don't know if you read this or not, but I know I've heard this somewhere, read it somewhere, that there was many more planned that day. But once we grounded the planes, plans came to an end. Here's George Bush's first speech after the 9/11 attack. This might be at the school, Roy.
Today, we've had a national tragedy. 2 airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country. I have spoken to the Vice President and have ordered that the full resources of the federal government go to help the victims and their families and to conduct a full-scale investigation to hunt down and to find those folks who committed this act.
So he said two planes. So at that point, the Pentagon hadn't even hit yet. So you're right. That's from
that
the school.
That was at the school. And then they put him on a plane. They sent the president to Louisiana. He went into a bunker in Louisiana for a bit, and then they flew him back to Washington and then up to New York.
Here is CBS's Bryant Gumbel talking about the plane crash as it happened, I believe. Listen to this.
It's 8:52 here in New York. I'm Bryant Gumbel. We understand that there has been a plane crash on the southern tip of Manhattan. You're looking at the World Trade Center. We understand that a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. We don't know anything more than that. We don't know if it was a commercial aircraft. We don't know if it was a private aircraft. We have no idea how many were on board or what the extent of the injuries are right now.
Mm.
And then here's somebody from CNN breaking into commercial.
This just in, you are looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center. CNN Center right now is just beginning to work on this story, obviously calling our sources and trying to figure out exactly what happened, but clearly something relatively devastating happening this morning there on the south end of the island of Manhattan.
So when the first plane hit, it looked so small that people didn't know what was going on.
Especially from a distance. Yeah. If you were probably up close, it was massive.
I do remember that them saying like they thought maybe it was a Cessna or something like that, and then obviously once the second plane crashed, then it was very apparent.
Well, I mean, I think if a Cessna hit, it would barely make any sort of impact.
Right, but they didn't know. Yeah.
Here's the president on 9/11 talking from Ground Zero about how America is mourning.
I want you all to know that America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens.
Mm. Mm.
Our sirens back.
Here's firefighters on the scene. Are you guys okay with this audio?
Yeah, sure, that's fine.
All right,
why do you have so much audio?
Wow.
Jeez.
Imagine as a 911 operator, Roy, getting that call.
No, I wouldn't. I could not imagine. That's just, I was only a 911 operator for a year, and there was only one instance that we had to open our emergency operations center for. We had a situation to where we had so many 911 calls coming in at once, we couldn't handle it, but I can't imagine on such a larger scale. I mean, it was only nine of us in a room, and we couldn't keep up with how many 911 calls kept coming in.
Lastly, I'll just play. This is legendary reporter Tom Brokaw that night.
We do know at this time that at least four targets have been attacked. The two Twin Trade Tower centers here in New York City, the Pentagon, and then another plane that was crashed deliberately into an area outside of Pittsburgh.
It was crazy, man. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Jennings was another. So Tom Brokaw, Peter Jennings, and the other guy whose name I can't remember, but he actually tweets to this day, and he's actually pretty good. He was the CBS anchor. And I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. But Peter Jennings died of cancer because he started smoking after 9/11.
Oh, really?
You can't make this stuff up.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, was so thrown by everything that happened. He actually took up smoking on 9/11. I mean, it was crazy. Like, I told the story on the air about how I was in New Jersey. Nicole, we never heard from you. Where were you on 9/11? Roy was in...
I think it was fourth grade.
Roy was in the fourth
grade.
You were in Raleigh, but what grade were you in on 9/11?
Fourth grade. Yeah, I was fourth grade. I didn't hear about it at school. I heard about it when I came home.
Really? Your school sheltered you from it?
I got off the bus, and I walked in, and my mom was just standing in front of the TV. And I remember I got my aunt was a flight attendant at the time, so I think there was a lot of scramble just to get in contact. But I remember it really pissed me off. Like, I really thought that I was going to go military after that. Because
really?
I
don't even think I understood it. Because buildings blew up all the time.
I went into my room and, got really mad, closed my door. I remember being really mad.
It must have been a difference of the way that her parents explained it to her and your parents explained it to you, Roy, to have,
yeah,
maybe.
I don't think I fully comprehended what...
Right.
What was happening.
Yeah, in that grade, that's hard.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in New Jersey, obviously, the next morning on 9/12, I called into the radio show and told everybody the situation that I had, and I was angry. I was angry because, you know, I grew up with the World Trade Center right outside my window. I grew up, you know, with the pride of New York City and just the shock and disbelief that these civilians, you know, had been targeted and killed. And we didn't know how bad it was at that point. You know, we didn't know how many people were buried under the rubble and how many thousands were going to be dead. And I said, we need to find out who did this and go over and bomb them off the map or something along those lines. And the radio station in California got complaints about how I was a warmonger, you know, because they're very liberal out there in California. And they were like, Maine needs to take it easy, you know, like things like that.
And blow them off the map. I like it.
704 texted in. We took a lot of texts, and we're going to play some phone calls here on where you were on 9/11. 704 says, I teach in Mooresville, and this morning we're having a heroes parade for our local firemen, police, and EMT. We're going to drive around campus and hold up signs as we thank them to honor those lost on 9/11.
Can I go back to you being stuck in New Jersey and not getting back to work?
Yeah.
So did you have to take, sick days or...
Good question. No, I think they just extended my vacation because I couldn't physically get home. There was no flights until Saturday.
So they just gave you free days?
Yeah, but it wasn't really free. I mean, I was an emotional mess.
Right.
You know?
I just know that, here at our work, it'd be, the whole thing.
I don't
They're
know.
They're like, did you put it in ADP?
I don't know.
They're like, are you running out of time?
Can you drive home?
Can you drive home?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was different, dude. I was one of three on the show, and I was a little shit. So,
yeah.
You know, my role was different. If I was the main host, they probably would have wanted me back as soon as possible. But I actually went down to 9/11 and handed out raincoats on Wednesday or Thursday.
Oh,
but,
down to the rubble?
I was so far. There were so many volunteers. I was so far from it.
Could you see it?
Yeah, you could. I mean, I could see the smoke and see the towers that were still half sitting there. And I've always said, thank God that I hate to say it, but I was in a way, I was thankful that the towers fell rather than have these big, giant, burnt out buildings with bodies in there. It ended the way it should have. They came down and people were rested there. You know what I mean?
I always wondered if there was still fire burning. And how many days it took to put out the fire.
It was smoldering. Yeah. It was smoldering for a long time.
And then just think about how many truckloads they had to get of debris to load out of there.
I think the last beams came out in 2006 or something like that.
So, yeah.
You know, because then they started building the new One World Trade. But I handed out raincoats to not even first responders. We weren't even that close. We were handing out raincoats to volunteers who were handing out food to the people.
The volunteers had volunteers.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the way it was. Let's see. Here's some more. Where were you? 740 says, I was in the third grade. I remember the day so vividly, sitting at my desk watching the news, feeling all of the panic, looking around the room and seeing the fear in the teachers' faces, which when you're so young, you hate to see fear. That's why we were joking about Nicole being chill, you know, a chill person. If you see fear in somebody who you look up to, that's scary.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's a lot of them. For 9/11, I was working in Charlotte, as was my father. He worked for banking in downtown, and they sent them home because they were afraid the banking in Charlotte buildings might be the next to be attacked. You just didn't know how far this was going to go.
Yeah, especially when the attack in the Pentagon happened. You were like, oh, gosh, this is nonstop.
704 says, I was working in the ICU in Charlotte. They were asking for volunteers to go to New York area to help the people in the hospitals. They thought they were going to be more survivors and would be needed in hospitals. Unfortunately, we were not needed because of the low number of survivors. Mm. That's true. You either got out or you didn't.
Yeah.
You know? Let's see. A lot of people were in the third and fourth grade. So how old are all these people?
They're our age. 29. Me and Nicole's, yeah.
Okay. I mean, just a lot. Fourth grade, third grade.
Did they not pull anyone out of the rubble?
A couple.
Maybe. I don't remember. Maybe a couple. Remember the...
I know the Ladder 49.
The cops
Ladder 49? What was that?
There
it was Ladder something.
With what's his name? The weird actor.
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, yeah.
Yeah, he was stuck in the Trade Center in that movie.
Over 1,100 remains are still unidentified.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, but they just recently identified one of them.
Maybe,
like in the past couple days.
It says that, because I get the skim every morning, and it said 1,106 victims' remains are still unidentified. The New York City Medical Examiner's Office has been using DNA technology to try and identify.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
And then 10,000 people have since, in the past 20 years, been diagnosed with a range of cancers related to it.
Really?
And 2,000 people have died from related illnesses since then.
Cancers because of the smoke?
There's a whole fund set up about all the stuff that was in the air for all the first responders that were down there helping.
I saw it looked like it had snowed afterwards. I can only imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, celebrities were there fighting for them.
Mm-hmm. Like,
It was Jon Stewart was a big one. Yeah. Stewart was at the trial when they announced the verdict and stuff. Or not the verdict, but they gave them they won the case. Someone says, I grew up in Ridgewood, New Jersey, which isn't far from where I was. I was a sophomore in high school, and in Spanish class got taken out of school that day because my family was scared. And then we went and took – my family was scared and had family that went to the towers. They were firemen.
Hmm.
So – a lot of things happened. We also took a good amount of phone calls, you guys, to remember where you were on 9/11. And as we wrap up the wrap party, we want to say thank you and a special shout out to all the first responders.
Yep.
Who, you know, so like effortlessly go into these buildings.
I know I can't.
When we're all running out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know that's right. I want to be a volunteer fireman, but like only go to specific things.
Right.
Like I don't want to do car wrecks, serious fires.
You just want to go get the cat out of the tree.
You got a kid stuck in a well, I'm in.
Okay. You know? Well, that's kind of dangerous.
Well, I'm in from afar. I'll hang back.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Lorraine, anything to add on 9/11?
No, I mean, I told you guys where I was, so.
Mm-hmm. You can explain to Cash.
He'll learn about it. It's going to be taught in school.
Yeah. Not yet, though.
Yeah.
He's only four. He just started preschool. That's kind of heavy for a preschooler who didn't live it. So, I don't know.
He wouldn't even understand.
No. My brother, I'm trying to think what grade my brother was in.
Probably the same around us.
I think he was in elementary school. What grade did you say
you were in?
Yeah?
Yeah, we were in fourth.
Yeah, maybe he was in third grade then.
That to me was the Space Shuttle Challenger. I had the same kind of experience when that blew up and we were all watching it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hoped for a minute. You're like, it's supposed to do that, right?
Yeah.
You know? But on 9/11, I think I had this, and I'm 23 at the time, and I think I had this vision of like how like lasers would shoot out from the ground and shoot down planes if they got close to us.
Yeah, we didn't have that.
You know, and I hate to say it, but the hijackers were smart. They used our own planes against us. Mm-hmm. It's not like they came in from you know overseas where
you
we could
detect it.
It was the Trojan horse.
Yeah, uh-huh. It was the Trojan horse.
Uh-huh. Motherfuckers. And they got on the announcement and they told that Flight 93 to sit down. Everything was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. You sound nothing like the pilot who told us a little while ago we were going to leave.
Yeah.
You know, and we can also see the commotion, you idiots. Anyway, here's some calls.
on a Friday.
You assholes. Here's some calls. Okay, this is Summer and Gaffney. Hey, Summer. Welcome to the Rap Party 9/11 special. What do you want to add?
I was just like many. First of all, y'all sure do know how to make a listener feel dango. Talking about being in school and all. But we were getting ready. I saw it on the first tower go get hit, and I yelled at my husband. And then I ran in and got our kid, our baby. Came back in here, and we watched the second one hit together right before we were getting ready to go to work.
How old is your baby? How old was your baby at the time?
He was, he's getting married this weekend.
Okay, so how old was, I mean...
Was he one? Was he...
One.
One, okay, yeah. Yeah, so he doesn't... That's the other thing that we talked about. Like, people, this is 20 years ago. A 20-year-old wasn't alive for it. Or was one. Or two, a month. Crazy.
We just held him and just stood there and watched it. And, like so many people.
We all did. We sat there, we watched the local news, we watched CNN, and 9/11 was the beginning of something that never was seen before on the news, Roy and Loren.
That people could go across the ocean and attack us?
No. The actual way that we get news now was different on September 10th. 2001, Summer. You'll know this too if you remember. There was no bottom line ticker shooting news across. The news was coming in so fast during 9/11 that's all the news could do was put they couldn't get the information out fast enough. CNN, all these news networks had nothing underneath.
Now they
all have that ticker of news shooting across, but that started on 9/11.
I remember a lot of people at work had actually just went and signed up for the military right then.
It's a good point. A lot of people did. Mm-hmm. You're right. Thank you, Summer. There was a professional football player, Roy, Pat Tillman, who left thousands, millions down on the table and left the Cardinals and went and fought a war.
So I was cheering for the Miami Dolphins after that, and they did a whole – I was on his tribute tour.
Oh, that's cool.
Overseas.
That's cool. He ended up dying, unfortunately.
I have goosebumps.
Friendly fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Yes. Yeah.
This is Andrew in Gastonia. Where were you?
Good morning, guys. Happy Friday. Happy Friday. I'm like you, Roy. I was actually in seventh grade coming back from elective class. I think it was band. And a buddy of mine was like, hey, man, the World Trade Center got hit. Well, I'm in seventh grade. I'm like, what the heck's the World Trade Center? I don't know.
Right.
And we watched the second tower get hit. And then, when people started jumping, then our teachers turned it off. But I still remember, seeing these other humans just jumping out of a building. And, it's either jump or burn.
It was crazy.
My dad ended up coming to get me and my older sister out of school because of it. But the crazy, it's not really crazy, but my dad's birthday is also on 9/11. So, it's one of those things of, the biggest thing I remember is how quiet it was after,
there was no planes in the sky anywhere. Yeah. And around the New York City area where you have three major airports and nothing but air traffic constantly. You're right, Andrew. It was so eerie. When I was in Jersey, I was in northern New Jersey, about 20 minutes away or 20 miles away from New York City, but that's like 2 hours to get there with the traffic. The only thing we heard was military planes. Mm-hmm. One of the cool moments was watching Air Force One fly over on Wednesday after, because it was a Tuesday that it happened. Wednesday, Air Force One flew over and all the jets were flying behind him. And it was like, you were crying because it was Bush looking at the devastation. Mm-hmm. And you were just like, what the fuck? What is going on?
Yeah.
Like, where am I? We thought we were impenetrable.
Yeah.
And you realized that we weren't. Andrew, you said your dad took you and your sister out of class. Roy mentioned that before. What was his – did he just want to hold you and hug you, or did he do it for safety reasons?
He did it because my mom told him to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, Loren, did you hear that? The woman told him to do it, and he did it. Uh-huh. Thanks, Andrew.
Good job.
All right. Let's talk with Liz in Lake Wylie.
Hi. How are you?
We're doing well. So tell us your 9/11 story.
I lived in Maryland as well as the other caller. I was an assistant principal at an elementary school. And actually that day, all the principals in all the elementary schools were at a meeting. So we were in charge. I remember my secretary saying, oh, that's weird. A plane crashed into a building in New York. Didn't really think too much of it. And then I was in the classroom and my secretary comes and she says, we're under a terrorist attack. And then we had a staff member whose husband was in the Pentagon. And so it was, getting someone to drive her even home to get, find out what was happening. And as you said, for people who were in school, all of a sudden the principals did come back. But then, one after another, parents just started coming and getting their kids. And the other memory, too, was how quiet then the skies became, because we have four airports near us.
We just said the same thing, Liz, on the phone call. You couldn't hear it right before you. You are so right. And that's an interesting theme that a lot of people, that really goes unsaid.
That was quiet.
And it lasts that way for a week. I got grounded on Tuesday. I didn't fly again till Saturday.
Yeah. Wow.
And when I flew that Saturday, the captain came on and he said, it's probably been a while since any of you flown. There's a new rule. If you want to go to the restroom, you will ring your bell and a flight attendant will escort you to the bathroom. Other than that, you will not get up out of your seat. Because there wasn't even armed guards at the airport at that point. Like, we didn't even know what to do.
Right.
You know,
right.
But air travel had to start again.
Imagine being a flight attendant after that and being asked to do that. That's scary. You have to be terrified.
Not only that, and then now you start talking about racial profiling, right? Because I would sit here and lie out of my teeth if I told you that I didn't see someone of Middle East descent and I was keeping my eye on him or her.
Everybody was racist.
Like, saying to myself, if this cat gets up, I'm going in. Like, and you know, the poor person was probably born here.
Yeah, he wasn't an extremist or anything.
That's a scar for sure. But what are you going to, I mean, it's never happened before. We never knew how to handle it. Now I feel like, God forbid anything happened again, we all went through that and we know that not every person with Middle Eastern descent is a bad person, you know? So, well, thanks for that, Liz. We appreciate you joining the 20th anniversary special on the Wrap Party.
Absolutely.
Oh, by the way, was that Pentagon person safe?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, good. Absolutely. And my husband's getting on a plane. He's leaving in a few minutes. So
good.
Things are good. Things are safe, and we're blessed.
That's right. All right. Thanks, Liz. One more, Roy.
All right. Sonia in Charlotte. Hi. Good morning. What's your 9/11 story?
Good morning. Well, Lauren had mentioned something about, you know, it was just an experience for, you know, the world. It really was. I was in Spain at Barcelona at the time, and I just remember I was just walking around and you know, people were like, oh my God, dragging me to the windows, and everybody was putting TVs in the windows and just welcoming people into their homes just to experience this together. But the outpour of support was incredible. American flags were up everywhere, hanging out of people's windows.
Ooh, I have
in Spain.
In Barcelona, yeah.
Yeah.
And this was in Barcelona, yeah. It was unbelievable. And I was there, you know, I got stuck there for an additional 6 days, but the support was just tremendous. It was incredible, actually. People walking around wearing the flag on them and they were just crying. It was just so emotional, even in Barcelona, Spain. So
I remember I went to a concert December of 2001. It was U2, and No Doubt opened for U2. What a great show, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Bono comes out during In the Name of Love. You know, In the Name of Love.
Yeah.
One more. And he's hugging the American flag, and they're putting all the names of the people who died on 9/11. Oof. I never cried so hard in a concert in my life. I mean, he was hugging the American flag, had it wrapped around him.
I remember, too, didn't we? I think it was Yellow Ribbons were for the soldiers.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Yellow Ribbons were everywhere around trees, all throughout the city.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
And also, 2 days before, I had been at the World Trade Center because I lived in Battery Park, and I got a little Coach handbag, and I just keep that near and dear.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I just want to hold on to that forever. It was just emotional.
It must have been hard going back to Battery Park. That's pretty close.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And not only that, I used to work for Chase Manhattan Bank, training the bank on some of their products and services. And, you know, we unfortunately, you know, two people I used to train just never made it out. Just because they had a heart attack, not even, it was awful. It was absolutely awful. It was crazy. So.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Sonia, well, thanks for sharing and being part of the 9/11 special. We appreciate it. Have a great day, okay?
Yeah, you too. Have a great day, guys.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.